Abortion pills have been legal since 2000 and now make up for more than half of all abortions because they're being sold as the more comfortable solution. But abortion pills actually come with many complications and side effects, like severe pain, heavy and prolonged bleeding, fever, infection, and cramping. But these are just the complications that pro-abortion organizations mention. What they don't mention is that abortion pills can lead to blood clotting, described by one patient as the size of a lemon, incomplete abortions, which require a follow-up surgical abortion, pain, sometimes described as worse than childbirth, mental distress and a fear of dying, and in some cases, the abortion pill has led to death of the mother. This isn't hyperbole. So far, 24 women have lost their lives from complications with abortion pills. And get this, nearly half of all women who take the abortion pill seek medical attention after. That doesn't sound very comfortable or safe, does it? In spite of these complications, abortion vendors have fought to remove safety regulations and to disregard the research that says women have been hurt by abortion pills. But the truth is this, these little pills kill.
When I worked at Planned Parenthood as an RHA, we were told to mislead the women that came in looking for abortion pills. We were instructed to tell them the abortion pills were going to be easy, and we knew they weren't. Still, I was told to go to the grocery store and buy a lemon to show the women how big the clots would get. These women were experiencing intense pain, and they were afraid for their lives.
The following programming is sponsored by the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
Welcome. You're listening to Positively Pro-Life, a podcast brought to you by the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation. On this podcast, we aim to bring you inspirational stories and conversation, important legislative updates, and informative interviews as we seek to restore and strengthen a culture of life. I'm your host, Ramil Tenney, Education Director at the Federation, and joining me is my co-host and Executive Director, Maria Gallagher. Welcome, Maria.
Thank you so much, Rimmel. It's great to be with you today.
It's really good to be with you as well. And today's topic of discussion is going to be the intersection of feminism and pro-life beliefs, as well as we will dive into the details of the tragic deaths of two women, Amber Thurman and Candy Miller, after taking the abortion pills. ProPublica recently came out with a long article titled, "Abortion Bans Have Delayed Emergency Medical Care. In Georgia, experts say this mother's death was preventable." The mother they are referring to in this article is Amber Thurman, and their conclusion is pretty evident in the title. Our guest, who is an OBGYN, is here to clarify what really happened in Amber's case. But before we go into our guest interview, here's Maria with our update for the week.
Remo, the following comes courtesy of Melissa Oden, an abortion survivor. Last week's important congressional briefing, led by National Right to Life, included NRLC President Carol Tobias, MCCL Co-Executive Director Kathy Blazer, and Sarah Jagorski, Communications Director of Louisiana Right to Life, who is also the survivor of a labor induction abortion. Melissa is saying that she rounded out the presenters as both the survivor of a saline abortion and the CEO of Abortion Survivors Network, ASN. Briefings like last Tuesday are influential for a multitude of reasons. Combating lies like those told in the presidential debate. There is no state where it's legal to kill a baby after they're born. They also provide a direct connection between those affected by laws or the lack of a law and the policymakers via their staffers. And as we know, these personal stories are remembered, shared, and continue to resonate long after a briefing. Congressional briefings are one solution to the problems we face in the pro-life movement. Strategically collaborating to gain a deeper understanding of an issue like born alive legislation. Making that possible requires real-life stories. Sarah shared a deeply personal look into what an abortionist and a woman undergoing an abortion having a conversation about the born alive infant as Virginia's Governor Northam remarked in 2019. Kathy offered an in-depth discussion of how Minnesota's pro-abortion governor Tim Walz helped to gut their born alive law. Carol reported on states with protective born alive laws. In turn, I, Melissa, talked about my reports of the status of born alive infants gleaned from research and what failed abortions look like now in today's post-Roe world. Incorporating survivors' voices, and we hope with ASN's leadership, mothers who have experienced failed, stopped, or reversed abortions resulting in a born alive infant will be a signal that these failed abortions do happen, and more often than we think. As this truth finally breaks through, we hope to find a more informed, responsive, and compassionate legislative environment, and God willing, foster a culture of life. It gives me great hope that together we can make a significant difference for abortion survivors and moms experiencing failed, stopped, and reversed abortions. Remmel.
Thank you, Maria, for that very informative update. And of course, abortion survivors give us a perspective like no one else. And this is very important to think about and to consider during the upcoming elections. Now, our guest today is Dr. Susan Bain, aka Dr. Pink Glasses, who is an OBGYN with over 25 years of experience. She is the founder and CEO of Pink Glasses Consulting, providing healthcare consulting with a life-affirming vision, and is currently the regional medical director for 4 pregnancy centers in North Carolina, where she oversees the medical aspects of the centers and sees patients with unintended pregnancies. Dr. Bain also serves on the medical board for CareNet, a pro-abundant life ministry, and on board of directors for the American Association of Pro-Life Obstetricians and Gynecologists, APLOG, serving as the vice chair and advocacy team leader, as well as the chair of board of directors for APLOG Action. So we're here, we're going to be discussing the abortion pill as well as feminism and pro-life beliefs. So welcome to Positively Pro-Life, Dr. Bain.
Thank you so much for having me.
So I was very struck by your name, the name that you adopted for yourself, Dr. Pink Glasses. Can you tell us what's the story behind that?
Sure. So these are trifocals. I'm 59, so I needed glasses to start with. But in 2019, I went up to the National March for Life. And that year, the next day, they had the Women's March. And I believe in a lot of issues related to equality. And I had never been to that march. So I decided to attend. And I quickly realized there wasn't much room for a pro-life feminist perspective. And at the same time, I recognized that there was a sea of hot pink. That was their color. Well, hot pink's my favorite color. And I was like, oh no, you don't get my favorite color. So I traded in my brown trifocals for hot pink ones. And the concept of being a life-affirming vision for women. And so that's how I got the pink glasses. My 32-year-old son actually branded me as Dr. Pink Glasses. He said it one day. So I can't credit myself for the name, but it has stuck.
That's wonderful. Now, have you considered yourself a pro-life feminist all your life?
You know, I think I'm going to separate the two words first. So yeah. I definitely pro-life my whole life. I grew up in a beautiful Catholic home where I was taught to respect life from conception to natural death. I then went into medical school and, well, I became an adult and I had to decide, as we do with everything our parents teach us, is what do I think as an adult? And it was in medical school when I opened my embryology textbook and, you know, paragraph one, sentence one talked about human development from conception and until death. And I thought, okay, the science aligns, which makes total sense that it should align. And I remember my, probably my very first moment though, that I had to really decide where I stood was my intern year. And about midnight, I got a phone call that there was a patient who had a baby with Down syndrome, and they wanted me to come start her abortion, meaning put some medicine in that would dilate her cervix. And I remember at that moment telling the nurse, I'll call you back. And I called my senior resident and I said, I'm not comfortable participating in this where one of my patients is going to be harmed. And he said, okay. But I remember dropping to my knees and saying, okay, God, you've given me these convictions. You've now got to give me the courage to follow through on them. And no sooner had I said that little prayer that my pager went off for another patient, I walked out the hall and I literally bumped into an attending who said to me, are you the new resident with the pro-life feet on your jacket? And I said, yes, sir, I am. And he said, I just want you to know you're not alone. It may feel like you are, but you're not. And I smiled and thought, wow, God, you answered that prayer mighty fast. But that was the first time I had to really solidly decide, was I going to just talk or I was going to walk the walk that I had grown up with and really was convicted. So that's the pro-life piece. I think the feminist piece for me, you know, when you look at feminism and its equality for the sexes, for me, I use the word empower more. I have always done things in my life to try to empower women or girls. I've taught, I've coached my daughter's softball team. I've coached tennis. I have tried to be a mentor to undergraduate students, pre-professional students, as well as students going into medical school and in medical school. So for me, it's about when you put those two words together, pro-life feminism, it's empowering women without abortion. That's the biggest lie I think that women have been taught. That it's an either or, meaning you can be a mom or you can be equal and contributing member of our society. And I actually was with a group of students who was here at our pregnancy center volunteering from a local college this morning, and they were on the women's soccer team and they were picking my brain. They were helping us. I'm at the pregnancy center where I work at, and they were helping us with our baby boutique because we have a big clothes fund drive this weekend. But you could tell they were eager and curious. And so I was able to talk to them about the fact that you don't have to choose. Don't fall for the lie that you're pitted against your unborn child. So for me, feminism from a pro-life perspective is really empowering women.
Well, that's amazing. That's a very good perspective. To have. I mean, we're all for the empowerment of women, but we see that the other side is often spreading lies about the pro-life movement, that we don't like the woman, we don't help her, we don't support her. But from your perspective, being a feminist pro-lifer, do you think modern feminism has something to offer to the pro-life movement? And if yes or no, if yes, what is it? If no, you could just.
Yeah, you know, one of my favorite groups is Feminists for Life, and they actually have on their website this statement: abortion is a reflection that we have not met the needs of women, and women deserve better. And that I couldn't agree with more. You know, when you look at the literature, most women will say, if my circumstances were different, I wouldn't have chosen an abortion. And so how do we meet the needs of women so their circumstances can be seen as different? And, you know, I think it's multifactorial. I've already mentioned that we have to stop pitting moms who are women who are pregnant with their preborn children, that there's something bad about motherhood. We have to accelerate motherhood. It's beautiful. I think our schools, particularly our college campuses and our workplaces, have got to be family friendly. I mean, we need to have great policies that support maternity and paternity leave. Child care is a huge issue. In the vice presidential debate last night, that came up. And that is so true. I'm in Eastern North Carolina, and it is such a barrier for women. You know, when women come in, the literature says 80% of the time it's socioeconomic reasons. They're not just using abortion. Yes, maybe a small portion for birth control, but the majority are like have real practical reasons why they don't think they can say yes to their child. I mean, since December, we've had 5 women in our center who are homeless. If we don't help them find affordable housing, how can they say yes to this baby? And so one of the beauties, I think, of policymakers now is that they're realizing that when they do have regulations that start protecting fetal life earlier, they're also recognizing that they've got to put into place policies that support the families. And we're seeing it more and more with legislation across the country.
That's terrific. Now, as an OBGYN, what do you think is the greatest misconception about unexpected pregnancies that pregnant women have?
Well, I would have used to said to, I would have in the past said to you that there's never a good time. You know, most timing is an issue. A lot of the women are in school. They have athletic scholarships. They're afraid they're going to lose those. They've just started new jobs. They're afraid they're going to, you know, their insurance maybe won't cover it. I've even had women think they'll get fired when they just started a new job. That would have been my answer before I got so involved with APLOG, the American Association of Pro-Life OBGYNs, particularly our advocacy organization, APLOG Action. And now that I am front and center on the national conversations, it is the biggest misconception is the American College of OBGYN, ACOG's statement that abortion is safe. They are at all costs trying to minimize the risk, particularly of the abortion drugs now, which we know at minimum 2/3 of the abortions now, based on Guttmacher's data from 2023, are the abortion drugs. And those drugs come with a black box warning, which is when the FDA approves a drug, high-risk, dangerous drugs have black box warnings, and those risks are severe that women can have, including the black box warning saying that approximately 1 in 25 women will go to the emergency department. And so to just tell women, which we hear over and over, and actually, you know, the woman who spoke at the beginning of this program shared, when I talk to women who come back to our pregnancy center after they've had abortions, their experience at abortion clinics, they don't feel like they get a good informed consent. As a matter of fact, they're often in a room of 20 people. So how can you ask questions about your own personal situation with when that's there? And they basically don't feel like they really understood what was going to happen. As a matter of fact, I recently had somebody who took the mifepristone, the first of the two drugs, and then she had to do this standardized test the whole next day and had no idea she would be in so much pain and bleeding. And so I would say the biggest misconception is that women are being told abortion is safe. You can just get it online. You don't need ongoing medical care. And, you know, I think talking about the deaths of the women in Georgia illustrate that that's just not true.
Yeah, and that is the consequence of constantly saying and hearing that abortion is safe, right? Mm-hmm. Now, can you speak a little bit more into that, into especially the death of Amber Thurman? What exactly happened there? Is it really the pro-life movement's fault for, as ProPublica seems to say?
Yeah, so last Tuesday, I read that article, and I immediately went on Instagram and just spoke my mind for about a minute and a half. And I I was sad initially, but the more I thought about it, I was mad because she did not have to lose her life. And of course, the next day, a second story came out from ProPublica on Candy Miller. Same thing. Both their deaths were preventable. Now, what's interesting is, Amber was pregnant at 9 weeks with twins. Georgia's law starts protecting fetal life at 6 weeks. So she had an appointment in North Carolina. I'm in North Carolina. We are a destination state in the South. Even though we start protecting fetal life at 12 weeks, our neighboring states, many of them are 6 weeks. She had a surgical abortion scheduled and she was running late. And the abortion clinic said they would hold her appointment for 15 minutes. She got there, it was too late, and it says in the article, and of course I don't have the medical records, I have the reporting based on maternal mortality safety committee records, that an employee, we don't know what type of employee, if this employee had the ability and the credentials to prescribe these drugs, gave her mifepristone and misoprostol, and so she would have taken the mifepristone that day, and then she went home and took the misoprostol. So mifepristone actually causes the embryo to die. Misoprostol actually empties the uterus, causes contractions. She stayed at home, and she actually had EMS had to be called. When she got to the hospital, she had five classic symptoms of what we would call a septic abortion due to retained tissue, meaning she didn't empty her uterus completely. So she had a tender abdomen, which her uterus was tender. She had an elevated white blood cell count. Our white blood cell count goes up when we have an infection. She had retained tissue in her uterus by ultrasound. She had, I'm just looking at the article because the two other features were, that was Candy's. She had two other things that are basically classic signs. She had during her pelvic exam, she actually had a foul odor. So bacteria can have a foul odor. And then she actually had very low blood pressure, which can happen when infection gets in your bloodstream. They waited 20 hours to do her surgery. She died on the operating room table. And she told her mom right before she went in, please take care of my son. This was medical negligence. There was the standard of care, and any first-year OB resident in the country could have seen her symptoms and her clinical history and known what to do. She should have gotten antibiotics and immediate DNC. What got me so mad in my Instagram post was the way that the negligence was being reported. Yes, the state committee said her death was preventable, but the state committee didn't say it was preventable because the doctor's hands were tied and they couldn't have cared for her. There was absolutely nothing in the Georgia law or any pro-life law in all 50 states that doesn't allow women in Amber's situation to have gotten the medical care she should have gotten.
And I think that this is a very important point because a lot of politicians are grabbing hold of these tragic stories. And they're exploiting them for political gain and for promoting the cause of abortion and for promoting the abortion industry. And in fact, these women were victims of bad medical care, medical negligence. How can we get that story out more?
Well, you know, I think one of the things that APLOG did last week is, and Dr. Francis was in a Senate committee hearing for the Finance Committee and talked about a woman named Alana Dixon. She died in Nevada about the same time of the exact same complications, but nobody's brought her up. And that's because in Nevada, you can have an abortion for any reason until viability. So there's no law to blame for their death or her death. And so you're right that, you know, the pro-life laws are not the reason. So what we at APLOG have really done is we actually wrote a letter last Monday to ACOG, the American College of OBGYN, and said, let's collaborate. We may have differing opinions on abortion, But we can all agree that we need to educate, that our doctors need to understand. And I'm going to be a little hard on doctors because I've practiced for 25 years and regulations change all the time. HIPAA changes, EMTALA changes. Part of our job is to know regulations. Part of our health systems, our office managers to just share with it. So you can't use as an excuse that over and over, I didn't know the law. So we've also, as doctors, got to do our job better. But one of the things that was really good that happened is South Dakota passed a Medical Education Act to create a continuing education video that Aplog partnered with in order to educate their healthcare professionals in the state of South Dakota on their law. And so clarity is power, and we've got to have clarity, and we can't use treat. Women are going to die. It's shameful in the name of politics and to try to think that these laws are the problem.
Well, thank you so much for clearing that up for us. These are things that, again, unless you're really invested, you don't hear about it or you don't find out details. And so the fact that you were able to be with us and break that down in such a way that we can all understand what the reality is, this has been such a great honor. But we only have a few minutes left. So can you tell us how our listeners can connect with you, how they can connect with Aplog? In case sure. they want resources or help from your organization.
Yeah, I would say that doctors who are interested in practicing or any healthcare professional from a life-affirming perspective, a Hippocratic Oath perspective, where we don't directly and intentionally kill our patients, we are a trusted source. And so it's aaplog.org, aplog.org. And then for me personally, you can email me at drpinkglasses@gmail.com. It's drpinkglasses, all one word, @gmail.com.
And you can also go find her on Instagram.
That's true. Yes.
This has been so fantastic, Doctor. Thank you so much for being on Positively Pro-Life. We greatly appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you for the good work you're doing.
Thank you. Positively Pro-Life is made possible through the generous support of the members of the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation all across the Commonwealth. The Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation is the largest single-issue pro-life organization in the Keystone State, with nearly 40 local county-based chapters. And remember, there's always a reason to choose life.